we go back to the 1950s and 1960s, and let's go to the great Henry County town of Galva, Illinois, and one of the true small school basketball legends in the state of Illinois, Rich Falk, who began his playing days at the great Wiley Park in Galva, Illinois. Great to visit with you, sir, and I know those memories still are vivid of those playing days back in Galva, Illinois, aren't they?
Oh, truly, you never forget where you came from, and those, I always attribute much of my early development. You never know if you're going to be successful at anything, of course, at a very young age, but if you love something, you have to have opportunity, and Wiley Park, as well as the park down at my south side of town, Lincoln School, where we had a full-court 10-foot baskets and a full-court down in the south side with 8-foot baskets, along with going up to Wiley Park and being allowed to enter into games with a lot of the older boys in town and boys that I looked up to, of course, and took enough interest in me to let me play with them. And, of course, when you can play against people who are better than you, that's a great way to develop your skills a little more quickly, I think. And so I was fortunate and always had surrounded by people who really seemed to care in a small town and made it possible. When you have opportunity, you have a chance to grow and get pretty good at something. So that park and when I sat down at Lincoln School, of course, had a whole lot to do with my basketball development.
Yeah, it's interesting. We were talking a little bit off the air, and you actually grew up on a farm outside of Bishop Hill, which is outside of Galva in Henry County. And then you told me, due to some health reasons with your sisters, moved to the big town of Galva nearby. But you have no doubt rural roots and from the farm. It was interesting you're telling me your dad got involved at the beginning stages of selling Morton buildings. Who doesn't know about Morton buildings? So you have some very impressive rural roots, Rich Falk, that's for sure.
Oh, yes. We love the farm. My brother and I, in particular, really were disappointed when we moved off the farm, but we knew it was for good reasons. When my sisters both had asthma and hay fever to the point where my folks were advised that they should maybe move to a state like Arizona. But Dad decided to move to the big city of Galva, and that turned out to be a good move. My sisters were able to cope with what issues they had health-wise, and they was all improved to the point where they weren't a problem anymore. But also for my brother and me, it was a terrific move because it put us closer to these opportunities that I was saying in terms of just dedicating ourselves to being as good a student as we could be, and also, of course, develop the skills that kind of came to us, I think, naturally in a lot of ways with some athletic ability. But the farm and working in the farms, of course, was a big part of my summer work. And I attribute that to my physical development as a player because, you know, we didn't have weight rooms and physical trainers or any of that stuff back then. And working on farms where you had some good heavy lifting and you had to do things to develop physically. And, of course, the good three good meals a day didn't hurt either. So because, you know, when I went into high school in 1956, I was only 5 feet tall and about 90 pounds. I mean, I was a little guy told that you should never play basketball. You were too small. But by the time I was a junior, I was approaching 6 feet, and 160 pounds, again, due to, I think, the natural development, but also the work on farms and developing some strength to the point where I could be a good player. But back to what you said with my dad. Yeah, my dad went from the farm to, he owned a gas station and Texaco station in Galva for a few years, and then went into the farm hardware business there in town, and once a week, went out and sold Morton buildings and did so well at it, they offered him a full-time job, Morton buildings, to have in Henry County. So he had a wonderful farm county there and so many surrounding counties, of course, but his principal territory was Henry County, and he rapidly became timing and farmers buying new metal buildings a lot, of course, at that time. My dad really enjoyed that work because it kept him in what he loved to do, and the farming industry is always very important to him, and he got very successful at it. I think he was a top salesman for certainly one of the top salesmen for many years. And they, my mom and dad were able to go around the world and from time to time in different places, of course, as a reward for his sales success. So it was wonderful that for them. And, of course, that made us as children feel awfully good for them.
That's a great story. And, you know, such an impressive resume you have involving basically interscholastic athletics, basically as your lifetime from your great playing days at Galva. Here's a kid that goes on to Northwestern and excels from tiny Galva, Illinois, becomes a Big Ten basketball coach at Northwestern, spends, I believe, somewhere around 20 years in the Big Ten office working as an administrator. Tell me about your adjustment from small-town Galva to basically the Harvard of the Midwest in Northwestern University, high academic institution. How did a small-town kid make that happen? And what was the adjustment like for you? Not only, you know, we talk about it athletically, but, you know, academically. How does a kid from a small school like Galva back in the day, you know, what was the transition like for you, and what were the keys to your success? I think a lot of people in our listening audience would really like to hear that.
Well, I appreciate that question because I'm often asked that. And I think people in smaller towns need to know. And I experienced this, and I know I have a number of friends that still in Galva, and my classmates and classes before and after me, and youngsters that you get to know in a smaller town from other surrounding smaller towns. We're one big collection of people who really care about what's important in life, and that's the power of choice, which is putting academics ahead of anything else. And I think the parents generally really stress that, of course, in smaller communities, knowing that if you want to pursue anything you want in life, most likely you're going to maybe choose to stay in Galva or in that area, or you may choose to go to some bigger community or wherever the opportunities are. But the thing you have to do is prepare for that, and the only way you can prepare for that is to be the best student you can possibly be, which has always got to be plan A. And the plan B can be anything else you want it to be, a passion for extracurricular or whatever, which in a small town, as you know, you can be involved in anything and everything you want to, basically. And that's something you don't get from bigger schools. But I found that starting in grade school in Bishop Hill, the small school we had there, where a teacher, you have a book, a piece, a pencil, a paper, and a teacher who you were told by your parents to respect and do what you were told. And when you put that together, and all through grade schools and small towns, I think you get this as well as any other bigger towns. If kids will listen to their teachers, people who care about them and helping to shape their careers, and pay attention to everything they're being taught, you can be as smart as and learn every basic you need to go off to the best schools, the most difficult schools this country can provide. And yes, when I chose to go to Northwestern, there's apprehension. You always wonder how well prepared you are, whether it's me for an athletic event or being a student or fitting in. All those things are a big adjustment, as we all know. But I had no difficulty whatsoever, and fortunately, one of the evidences of that, I was all Big Ten, all academic, and I certainly wouldn't have predicted that, nor anybody else probably going off to a school like Northwestern. But you can manage time, and I think the best thing about smaller town growing up is that, and it certainly was in my case, both my sisters ahead of my brother and me, and my brother, too, came to Northwestern right after me. He was just a year behind me. He was an outstanding baseball player at Northwestern. A lot of people forget that. But we learned that you had to be a good student first and then pursue your other passions. And when you're in a small town, you can be in, as I said, all four of the major sports back then. They all contribute to your attitude and your confidence level and feeling good about your chances to handle almost anything in life. And so I always encourage young people, I still run basketball camps in the summer, that, you know, follow your passion, put the time in to be the best. And as my dad always said, all you, anybody can ask is you do the best you possibly can at everything you do. And if you do that after, you understand the importance of plan A is always to be the best student, get the best education that you can so you control your own life and life doesn't control you.
Yeah, and here's a kid, too, I know. You didn't play in the NBA, but still you were drafted by the Boston Celtics. And I'm going to use Western Illinois collectively here. And I'm talking about small-town kids that have made it from our area collectively, Western Illinois, from small towns that have made it and have had an impact in the Big Ten. And two come to mind, Rich Falk, 1957 to 1960, Ethan Happ from the Rock Ridge School District, 2014 to 2018. I don't remember anyone else collectively from Western Illinois that has been able to do that in the Big Ten. I know Ethan didn't live on a farm, but can you know, there's some comparisons I guess I can draw between you and him. And what do you think of his game?
Oh, he's terrific. And again, there was a case of a young man who, when he got off to Wisconsin, he was in a wonderful program that obviously dealt with fundamentals and worked on his physical skills, his physical strength, and I think he was redshirted as, I believe, his first year back in our day. Of course, you didn't redshirt people. We couldn't even play as freshmen because it was a freshman ineligibility rule that you had to acclimate to school and orientation for a year before they even let you play varsity ball. But no, he went into a program where he was fortunate enough to grow in stature. He had all the fundamentals and basics and values, again, I think that small towns give you. And not just small towns, but certainly I think most people in smaller communities, with families being as important as they are in everything we do, wonderful family values and values for what it takes in life. He certainly, if you watch his play, it's not about his physical skills and his ability to do important things to help his team win, including scoring. But you can tell his attitude, that's a nonstop player. And that's, I like to think that when I played the game or any others that I played with, that no one, if you're a player, nobody needs to motivate you. I mean, you want it, you have a passion. And the top players always tend to stand out. Every coach will tell you they're the first ones to practice, last ones to leave is a common expression. But whether that's an exaggeration or not, the point is when they're in practice, the Michael Jordans, for example, with the Bulls, I got real close to that because of Tex Winter, my former coach, was an assistant with the Bulls. Michael Jordan and Pippen were the hardest workers on the team. And that's what Hap is, I'm sure. But Wisconsin, at least he gets credit for that. And I like to think that I was fortunate enough to have those important attributes instilled in me at a young age. But from our area, Western Illinois, at the time, Jim, I was growing up, there were outstanding players coming out of that area that, fortunately, again, being in a small town, kind of in the middle of Quad Cities, Galesburg, Kewaunee, Peoria, that area, we, in the summers, Mickey Tiemann from Kewaunee used to have the Kewaunee YMCA reserved, and we'd go up there once, sometimes twice a week in the summer. Dave Downey, great player, one of Illinois' great, University of Illinois' greats from Canton. Kenny Siebel from Rock Falls. Bumpy Nixon even came over once or twice from Galesburg in the summer. Don Nelson, when we were younger, would come over, and a lot of the Bradley players and a lot of the other local players in the area. But you see, once again, what I'm saying, if you spend your time in the off season again playing against other quality players, and that just has a way of making everybody better. And if it doesn't, at least everybody in that area at the time, we had numerous athletes that were there that our same age or went out to colleges just before us that proved to all of us, that we could all do it. Why not me? And the confidence that goes with seeing that. In my own town, Galva, I'm not the first one that ever went off to college and make a career of modest success, if not pro-level success. You know, there were others, without naming them all, because that wouldn't be fair. I'd miss somebody. But you look at Galvin and his history, there are a lot of people before me that set the tone for all of us younger guys growing up to say, well, if they did it, why can't I? And that's an inspiration that I need.
Well, and to wrap up here, I wanted to get your thought, and we began our conversation talking about Wiley Park in Galva and where you played at. You know, there's no question more opportunity today for kids to play athletics at the youth level, at the high school level, and the organization that's involved in it now. But that's also presented some problems, too. And, you know, you just don't see, you talked about what you did, you know, and how you got better. You said, if I want to get better, what do I want to do? I'm going to be a 5-foot freshman, you know, before my growth spurt. And I'm going to hope and pray and beg and say, will they let little Richie Falk play against them? And sometimes they probably said, yeah, we'll let him play. Sometimes no. You have to sit back and wait your turn. So you know, I think you live in the Chicagoland area now. And, you know, I can get in my car on whatever day during summer vacation, spring vacation, after school, and I can drive by every park in the vicinity I live in and see if a kid is playing, working on his game on his own, or if there's some pickup game. And what the answer is going to be what? No. You just don't see that anymore. And that's the one thing that bothers me a little bit about game development, where you improve on your own. You don't have a shooting coach. You don't have a strength coach. You're not playing on this travel team. It's just you trying to get better on your own. Is that something that you've noticed, too, that just doesn't happen anymore? That it's just all about organization now if you want to get better.
Yeah, everything is so so commercialized in a way. So many things you just said are obviously in vogue now. I think you're right on. These kids today have so many distractions and that we didn't have growing up. You know, you were outside all the time playing when we were growing up. Now there's with TV and social media and all the other things that we all hear about and are concerned about when it goes to extremes, of course. But kids today, they have so many other things that they can be doing and are interested in doing, and their friends do, so they kind of fall in line, I think. But the hard thing up here in the bigger schools, and this happened, of course, to my own two sons, is that unlike, again, the smaller town experience, you pretty much, by the time you're a sophomore in high school, you almost have to pick the sport or one or maybe another sport that you might be really skilled at and really good at that you want to try out for even, and to have a chance to have that be part of your high school experience, which, as we all know, being a part of any team, whether it's team sport or individual sport in high school, is a wonderful extracurricular activity for everybody, men and women, by the way. We're not talking about women as much, maybe we should. The opportunities now are limited when you get to the bigger schools where there's much more competition, many more kids that have gone through the sacrifice and put in the time, and whether it be AAU or whether it be on their own or whatever, who knows what's the right path to being as good as you can be. But basically it comes from within. You take a player that, you know, the good Lord blessed me with legs that could jump. I was 6 feet tall in my junior year in high school. But the equalizing factor that some aren't blessed with, their legs, that I had a 36-inch vertical, which means I could dunk the ball. Now, that means at 6 feet, I could play with the average 6'3 player in college basketball. You know, so it's not how tall you are. I tell kids at my camp all the time, it's how good you are. It's not how big you are. It's how good you are. And sometimes players are blessed with a, you know, better jumping ability or whatever that can be an equalizer when it comes to as you go up and play in the higher ranks. But the skills that a player and his parents see in that player is my point. At a younger age, nobody would have predicted that in my sophomore year up in this area that I was going to be 6 feet tall, scoring a lot of points and dunking a basketball. So, you know, that junior and senior year, I think for a lot of players and young students, men and women, student athletes, they don't really know where they're going to be at their best in a certain sport until that senior year, and sometimes they've made a choice that doesn't allow them to get that far.
Yeah, you brought up, as we wrap up, too, I heard Dave Downey, he did an interview a couple weekends ago, I think I heard. He was inducted into the University of Illinois Athletic Hall of Fame, but he mentioned your name, and I think, and I don't know if this is an urban legend or not, but you scored the first official basket at the, well, we call it the State Farm Center now, but the Assembly Hall. Is that a true story about you?
Yes, it is, and I can tell you, it was a wonderful experience. Forget about that. I mean, that'll get you, that's a trivia question. It might get somebody a cup of coffee. But the significance of that game is we were the first Big Ten game played in there. And we had just come from Iowa, where we up and beat them rather soundly at Iowa, and we came to Illinois. In those days, we played Saturday, Mondays. And so we came into that arena. You can imagine, there was not one arena in the country and maybe in the world at that time that even rivaled the look and the facilities and the beauty. We thought it was the eighth wonder of the mm-hmm. world when we walked in that building. And our jaws dropped. But to have that opportunity to play in it is more meaningful, of course, than scoring the first basket in my mind. We didn't win the game, so that took some away from it, too. But I might also add, I didn't have one of my best nights in that place. That was a big adjustment for outside shooters. Inside players, I think, always did better in that arena because outside, you know, you have the expanse of all the backdrop is something you're not used to. At least we weren't back in those days in the old field houses. You know, you had more of a background a little closer to the sides, and you had a little better shooting background than having open expanse after or behind baskets. So that was a big adjustment for a lot of us. And I, nowadays, of course, with all these big arenas and all these wonderful new facilities, I think players are so used to any circumstance they get into that they adjust a whole lot better than we did there because it was kind of a first-time experience.
All right. Well, I tell you, a great visit with a great guy and Rich Falk and a great basketball resume growing up in Galva and graduating from Galva High School in 1960, playing at Northwestern and excelling there, not only on the court but in the classroom, became head coach of the Northwestern Wildcats and I think spent around 20 years in the Big Ten office as well. I guess the one thing that we'll wrap up on, I think the one really neat thing about you, sir, I've had a chance to meet you a couple times through my Illinois Basketball Coaches Association work, and then also, you know, still staying involved with the people of Galva. So your roots are in Galva, but you haven't forgot about those roots. I know you're still involved and come back, and, you know, I think you were the commencement speaker there not too long ago and still involved heavily in that community. So that says to me, Galva meant a whole bunch to Rich Falk.
Well, thank you. That's good to hear because you never want to forget where you came from. And that is, you know, every experience you have and where you live, where you come from, the people you surround yourself with and that have influenced your life, I think are the people who really shape your chances to do what you really want to do in life. And I would just like to say one other thing if I could. You know, I often get asked the question, why would you choose Northwestern when you were recruited by so many other outstanding schools also? And the answer is really simple. I had an uncle, Ernie Nordstrom, who grew up in Bishop Hill, and he worked his way up through Chicago through the banking business to the ticket office at Northwestern and assistant athletic director. So I was seeing games at Northwestern when I was in third grade. And when it came time to be recruited, it's important for me to note that there was a great player by the name of Joe Rutlick from Princeton, Illinois, who was in the class just before we, being recruited at that time in 1960, were impressionable in the recruiting process, obviously, to the top schools. There weren't any better basketball programs in the Big Ten at that time than Northwestern. Joe Rutlick's teams with Willie Jones and Nick Manis, players who went on to play pro ball, second place 2 years in a row, the third biggest arena in the Big Ten at the time in McGaugh Hall. There were a lot of reasons why you would put Northwestern if you could get in at the very top of your interest list. So, you know, a lot of people ask me, if you had other opportunities, why would you choose Northwestern? Because I think they tend to think too much about some of the losing over the years. But at the time, myself and others were choosing schools back in 1960. Let me assure you, Northwestern was at the top of the list of, if anybody, you know, ask Dave Downey and a lot of other outstanding players. But now we're getting back to that, and hopefully Northwestern, of course, will continue to make the strides that we see under Chris Collins. And I had my time at Northwestern. It was a wonderful experience for me and my family, and I feel very blessed to have grown up in a small town that helped prepare me in every way to kind of pursue my dreams. So I've been blessed, and I appreciate it so much.
All right, Coach, always great, man. Great observations today. I love the story about your dad selling Morton buildings back in the day. Awesome recollection. Thank you, sir, and hopefully we'll see you down the road.
Oh, I look forward to it. Thanks so much. Appreciate the opportunity to visit with people.